Hello everyone and welcome to Captain Earth Mini Talk. We're going to be doing episodes 2 through 4 because, just like JoJo, we've been busy and things like that. So, and today I have JR with me.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Doing okay?
All right. So, you enjoying Captain Earth so far?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, and as maybe not exactly a surprise series, as I was expecting some pretty good things out of Bones doing another mecha show. I've seen when I first watched it, the comparison was very Bonesy with a lot of Eureka 7 with the style of the series, and as we've gotten a little deeper, maybe the confusion of the series is starting to add up.
Yeah, I can definitely feel that. And I guess just to get right into episode 2, it kind of began with like Daichi doing his fight, his very first mech fight in space. And I guess if he gets up there, he kind of blanks out and forgets he's where he's at, and he has no idea what he's doing, try to control it and everything. And the mysterious magical girl, which we'll talk about later, she basically guides him through the fighting of the, I guess, Moko, the first time he has a fight, and it's very weird.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting first fight for him because we saw just, he kind of didn't know where he was at, didn't know how he got up there, but fortunately they had some methods that they could go to sort of save Daichi in that situation.
Right, and through the magical girl's help, he beats Moko and returns to Earth. And that return to Earth scene was kind of cool. We see the robot in its, like, I guess, tiny form, which still is pretty big. And I know I said on the podcast when we did last time, but the scale is kind of crazy. Hell, the Earth engine is like still smaller than them, because when it lands on Earth, it's about a small. I think it would say smaller than a Gundam. It's pretty tiny. And I don't know why I found that interesting. I just thought it just shows you how big the enemy he's fighting is, really.
And it shows just the from the launch sequence that we saw in episode 1, how a big thing got even bigger and bigger and bigger. So, in a sense, I mean, these are some large mechs that are going to be fighting in this series.
Yeah, and it's like it kind of explains tells everybody why such a long transformation sequence is needed, because he's fighting a big enemy. So it's like even when he's fully transformed, he's still small. So maybe it's like also shows you the difference in technology. How maybe Earth's not that advanced right now, but we're somewhat advanced. It's not that far. And then when he gets back to Earth, his uncle kind of scolds him a little bit for doing what he did, because it's kind of dangerous. It was reckless, and he could have died. And yeah, but it's just. Typical Mecha, he's just doing it because he felt he had to and all that. And I
Kind
guess
of
we
a
just,
cool uncle, though, as
yeah,
we've
he
seen
is.
in the first couple episodes here, that he's not going to be super hard on this kid or feel like he has to raise him the same way that Daichi's dad did. Just kind of seems like an okay guy so far.
Yeah, different from the usual mech, kind of father figure. They usually are, like the Gindos or. Much like I forgot the guy from the original Eureka, the one that Renton looked up to.
Ad Rock, that was the old one.
Yeah, the young guy, but he was kind of mean to Renton too. He was
Holland.
yeah, Holland was very physical. Yeah, that's how he solved everything. And but this uncle character seems to be more relaxed, but he does still show concern. I don't like that. And I guess we learned that when he gets back to base, that the Live Luster possibly, maybe controlled Daichi to make him do what he did with the robot. Actually make them get in the robot, because I guess it's a living organism.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird weapon right now. It seems like Daichi has some understanding of how to use it, but it definitely does seem like it's using him.
Right, yeah. And that explains why that we saw like the little kid that he saw in episode 1. It kind of lured him into like, oh, this is gonna be fine. Like he was the gun was basically tricking him, so got him to do what he did, but it's trying to defend Earth. And at the same time, we see Hana's her Live Luster right next to his, so it's like it kind of makes you wonder, because they do explain later on that the silver one is the Earth Live Luster. So it's like what is Hana's? If she's is she not from, you know, I assume she's not from Earth, but I think she might be a different species altogether, but it's kind of interesting seeing that difference.
Mm-hmm.
And when Daichi gets there, he sees his two friends that they're wearing strange headgears, and he doesn't understand what's going on, but he just runs in there and he thinks everything's all fine, just talks to Tepe normally, while his uncle is kind of yelling at this guy, I don't know his name, but he's from this company called Salty Dog, and I guess they oversee Globe, I guess is what they do.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're wearing these headgear, and it's like, I think they're bombs or something?
Yeah, it's something like that, or you could just kind of look at it for, you know, Globe and Salty Dog as like a protection device from them, almost kind of like a leash that if they start acting up, you can just push something and a noise sort of overtakes their ears and sort of stops them in their place.
Right. And Daichi being the kind of cool bro he is, he has to wear one. He's just like, whatever, I don't care. As long as I get to be with my friends, is all he cares about. It kind of shows he's got this, like, I don't know, innocence about him. I mean, he's a young kid, so he's not really fully grasping what's going on around him, but I think he's more concerned for Hana and Tepe right now than, you know, saving the world right now. But, yeah. And, you know, we get all that out of the way, and we go to the other side of, I guess, this series, which is the evil bad guys, I guess you could call them. And I don't know the guy for the, he owns this company called Macbeth, which is, you know, obviously, oh, Shakespeare.
Yeah,
you know?
yeah.
I heard some complaints about that. It's like kind of right in your face. No, but not only that, but they have an AI named Puck, which is also a Shakespeare character. So
we get the message.
It's like, could you make him more Shakespeare? I mean, as long as they're not speaking Old English, that's fine. we have Moko and Amra. They live there at this big tower. It's kind of weird, and I guess the owner is kind of like, you know, I guess his secretary is concerned, like, why do you give these two, like, free reign? And I guess they're basically called designer children, I guess, what they're codenamed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're weird.
It definitely seem like, you know, we're getting introduced to them now. They definitely seem like the infantry of the series.
And I've seen Bill quickly label them as, like, Team Rocket because they do get beat fairly fast. I mean, and I guess they can kiss each other and they share memories, swap memories. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird scene. Was that in the third episode or?
I think it might have been the very beginning of the third episode. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you can't really think of them as brother and sister, or
right?
Else that scene would have been weird. Uh-huh. Aside from just, you know, the sharing of memories to kind of see what happened in that battle.
I have seen some art where they show some other characters, but they're all, like, faded out in the background. There's a couple of guys, so I'm like, I hope, you know, I know we're probably going to get some guy kissing because they got to share memories. That's going to be the excuse, but obviously we know what it's usually for. But.
Yeah.
But going back to the AI Puck, it's like, you know, I think in the lore, Puck's a trickster, so it's like, I don't, who's playing who in this? You know, the Macbeth owner, or is Puck gonna, you know, actually be revealed as like the main threat of the series? Because AIs in typical anime, they're not really trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can switch any moment.
Yeah, we're not.
And like we saw, robotic notes. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've only seen like the AI that are on the good side, like getting back to Eureka 7,
right.
Al, like George or something. Like we see good AI, but we haven't seen potentially bad AI.
Right. Yeah. And this is curious. What, you know, what his purpose is, but yeah, he's very perverted though. This AI, he's always talking about the secretary. He's like, you should get with that. She wants you. You can totally have that. He's like, yeah, okay. He just ignores him. And the last part, close up the episode, was Roro Fight the Power, which was basically Daichi just saying, screw it, and he just walks outside out of range of this antenna, which is basically, I guess, the control for the helmet, and he summons his magic gun and blows it up. And I just thought that was kind of, just seeing him summon the gun, like, how did you know to do that? Like, I don't, it's weird.
Yeah, seeing him in these episodes almost kind of seems like the antithesis to Shinji Ikari.
Right.
Just kind of the way that he goes about this situation that he's in. It's actually interesting when you see the subtitle under Captain Earth. It's about it's a summer I'll never forget. Kind of saying like it was very good times for him, and sort of to see him do what he did at the end of episode 2, freeing them and wanting to go out and show the boomerang and stuff. It says a lot about the kind of character Daichi's been so far.
Right, and that's like that's one thing I forgot. His main goal was to find those two, was to show the boomerang again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so it's like he had this promise when he was like a little kid, and he kept it all these years for that long, and then finally he ends up meets them again, and you know, frees his friends, and I thought that was kind of nice. And that's the way to close the episode. And then episode 3 kind of rolls in. We get, you know, the reveal of who the magical girl was. It's actually Ikari. You've seen her in the opening a few times. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like you said, after that podcast, yeah, she is kind of my favorite character right now.
Yeah, I mean, she's fantastic. Yeah, I really like her.
She's got this, I don't know, crazy personality. I don't know exactly how to describe it. It's just, you know, when she's first introduced, everyone's kind of like, who the hell is this girl? Like, and they found out it's the commander of Globe, I guess his daughter. And she's this super hacker, and just she's all over the place. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's kind of a, for the kind of character that she's introduced as, like we saw her, you know, typically what you think of, what we've seen of hackers so far is a personality that matches Akari's, or we could go to the opposite extreme, which was the girl from Valvrave, which I believe her name was Ikari too.
Yeah, I think so. It was. Yeah.
And then there's another Ikari in an anime this season that I'm kind of confused about. But getting back to Yomatsuri, I kind of like that her character is a little level in terms of personality that we see through these episodes, that she is this sort of upbeat personality, magical girl that enjoys hacking, but as we'll discuss in episode 4, she's not all of that. She's not single note.
Right, yeah, that's true. And I guess we find out that, you know, Daichi's uncle is just tired of the way things are at the base with Salty Dog, and he's just like, I'm taking these four kids, and they're going to live with me in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Salty Dog guy is kind of like annoyed because that's like, I think, taking his job away from him, basically. He basically told him to get the hell out of here. And that's what he did. Because he frees all of them, and they live together in his house. And, you know, it's typical anime stuff. You know, it's always like that. You know, you have the people move in together, and you're like, oh, they're going to live together. And, yeah, they're doing that and this.
this Hana girl doesn't know how to conduct herself in a house and just walks out completely naked.
Right, and he's just like, oh my god, they're all... Because he told the guys early, you know, you're living in the house full of, you know, some girls, you know, try to restrain yourself, and...
Yeah.
And she's the one who does...
And then Ikari, she has me beat.
Right, it's like... it's like, oh my god. Then I just got visions of, like Evangelion, when Asuka first moves in, and she's the same way. She runs out naked, and everyone's like, oh my god, I see everything, like...
Yeah, but convenient... camera angle there.
Right. And after that, you kind of get kind of new friendships forming. You know, Ikari and Hana kind of hang out, and Daichi and Tepe, we were friends before, but they kind of get, I guess, reignite that friendship again. I think that's pretty nice.
It's pretty good that for the most part, they seem to get along. They can coexist with each other. There's no animosity that seems to exist, at least yet, between these four kids.
Right, and last thing I spoke of Eva, it's like there's no Ray, there's no Asuka, you know, butting heads. Oh, she's the best girl. Yeah. I hate her. This cast seems like they're going to be, like you said, pretty fairly friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a rift that causes Larry where, you know, characters' personalities change. Because right now Hana's kind of a flat on her personality.
Yeah.
She's very Anori. Like yeah, kind of like Ray, yeah. Mm-hmm. And very like Anori from Guilty Crown. She's just responds to commands and doesn't really talk much, but I'm hoping Ikari can bring out some personality in her, at least.
Yeah.
And Tepe and Daichi, I know, if Inaga's watching, she's probably shipping them really hard right now, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They keep trading the, that thing back and forth.
Right. They're one up each other, like, show me something cool. Oh, man. That's a bad fan fiction waiting to happen. And after all that, we get more with the evil organizations and whatever, the shady people. Salty Dog, apparently, that guy is an agent for a group called the Ark Faction. And they want Hana for some reason, and they don't really explain really why in the episode. It's just kind of, we want her for this plan to work.
Yeah.
So
we have, it's coming from all angles. There's, you know, good guys and bad guys everywhere. Bad guys within Planet Earth, and of course the Kilt Gang.
Yeah, and you know, this guy's kind of sees, I guess he's told that you should eliminate Daichi as soon as possible. He's in the way. And I was like, damn, that's kind of crazy. But just seeing the guy turn his cup into a radio, I was like, oh my god, I did not. Because they kept showing the cup every time it was in the scene.
Yeah.
You know, they always showed you, like, zoomed in on it, like, it's special, it's just something important.
Yeah, this crazy futuristic series goes back to old-timey kids getting cups and strings to have a conversation, but
right.
In the future.
So now we just got the next question: is there's, you know, what's the Ark Faction? You know, what is Hana's role, and what is the this Kaivarto's plan? It's like almost reminds me of Robotic Notes, how we had these organizations and this prophecy and this, you know, all this stuff in the background. It's like, it's kind of weird, but I'm pretty sure that's just the mystery that's going to be in every episode, hinting towards and revealed. And speaking of that Salty Dog, whatever guy, he I guess discovers that the next Killer Gang is about ready to hit Earth, and he finds out that was the one that I guess killed his dad years ago, and
yeah,
kind of baits Daichi into fighting again.
Even considering that the mech was not fully repaired yet, and he would basically be going out there with a damaged mech,
right? Basically charging in the battle with like a broken sword, and it's like, you're going to get owned really hard. And he basically, you know, lures him in and takes the bait and goes out there and fights after his uncle kind of told him not to do it because, like you said, the machine's not fixed and he's technically not really ready to fight in this robot because Akari had to help him. So, I guess Daichi's, you know, up there to fight, and he gets saved by another mysterious robot that appears in front of him. And I guess they revealed that it's actually Tepe, because he did this kind of the rainbow thing, but Amra, I guess, knew the robot, so he called him something else. I forgot the name he called him, but...
Niotani?
Oh, that's what he called Daichi at the end of 4, but... But, yeah. Anyway, he called him, like, by a different name, and I guess, you know, he knew the robot, and I guess it shows you that they were friends, or knew each other. And that's how it ends with episode 3, just kind of ends with him showing the rainbow, the Daichi, and that's about it for that episode.
Kind of makes sense that there would be some kind of tie there, considering it's not exactly a human thing to make a rainbow in your hand.
Right, that's true. And finally, with episode 4, I guess we get to, there's, I guess, Hana and Tepe are kind of both under, you know, all these exams, and the physical exams, you know, mental exams, and they reveal, I guess, you know, Hana, obviously, you know, we know, the viewer knows that she's not human. I mean, we know that. And Tepe, yeah, he's not human either. I mean, that's another reveal.
The shocking truth.
Right.
That we all knew.
Yeah, we all knew, exactly. And I guess Tepe is more like Moko and Amarok, I guess. He's more like those two, because he has the power to use the Killer Gang, and I guess do some that science babble. We learned that they don't actually get into robots. They actually become robots. So
yeah,
it makes you kind of wonder. You know,
it was kind of interesting, that explanation. And of course, Hana assisted with the power of song to sort of help Tepe get up there into battle. And then the surprise for Amarok was when he went against him.
Right. And he's just like, oh no, it's you. And and yeah, it's you know, kind of, to us it's obvious, we knew they weren't human, but the idea of them actually becoming the robot was kind of interesting. So it's almost like, I know they mentioned before in one of the episodes that that's the only way they can actually get to Earth is by doing the space travel dimensional thing, because I guess they can't do it right away or something on Earth. I forgot why. It's just there's a reason for it, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, meanwhile we have Akari kind of hanging out with Daichi because those two are kind of, I guess, banned from the base right now. Why Tepe and Hana go through their exams and things, because I guess they don't want them revealing what's been revealed about these two characters. And you know, Daichi's feeling kind of lonely, down in the dumps, kind of sad that he can't hang out with his friends. So Akari kind of does something very awkward. She lifts her shirt up and shoves her belly button in his face, and gives this like weird dance. It's like, I wasn't expecting something like this, but
yeah,
it was very. I guess it came off more comical because since Akari being the way she is, you know, she's not like a Frau from Robotic Notes who's always thinking about, you know, that on her mind, but she, you know, is innocent and just playing, being playful with him.
It's almost kind of like a, you know, brother sister type thing.
Right, yeah.
With them.
She knows, yeah, she knows he's like sad and not feeling happy, and she just tries her best to cheer him up, and it eventually works. I mean, I think that and getting some food might help.
Yeah, he was saying, like, that kind of makes me feel better.
And like your, I guess, note here that Amrok and Mocha kind of sneak into the base using this this big truck, this crepes truck, is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's an alien species, but they're sneaking in with an ice cream truck.
Right.
And they're selling selling crepes.
Yep, and Mocha kind of uses her feminine looks to get, you know, access to the base, you know, and tricks them. And I guess they use some kind of retinal scan or they're scanning something, and they don't come up on the scan at all, and they're a bit, I guess they teleport, or how they got in the room, I don't know. But, and I guess it shows you that Mocha's also a hacker. So there's this, like, moment where she infects the computer system and there's rabbits everywhere, and almost like this mini battle that she has with Akari. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
So yeah, basically they invade Globe, and they're trying to get Tepe, and all hell's breaking loose, and mechs are, you know, things are being blown up. It gets pretty crazy after that.
Yeah. And then we kind of see that the room is blown up. After Daichi and Akari went in, Daichi went down to see Tepe and talk with him and trade back to Globe again because, hey, that was pretty cool when you did that thing. And then the room's all blown up and Daichi's knocked out. And that's when we see Malk and Amarok reveal their true name.
Yeah, they have two different names as well, and it's kind of weird. It's like, oh my god, all these different names. It's hard to keep up with some of these names. And they revealed, I guess, kind of the plot of the series almost, that the killer gangs are actually going to Earth because the humans are the food source, and they want to feed them their libidos. And it's kind of weird because it's, you know, very sexual. You know, it's like they got to feed on men or feed on people. It's like, eh, I'm kind of confused, but at the same time, they're thinking more like, eh, vampire stuff. They're probably like space vampires, like Valve Rave. So, but like, I guess it just shows you that that's the plot for the enemy. Because I've been wondering for a while now, like, why are they interested in Earth? You know, are there species dying? They need a place to live. But actually, they want to take over Earth. So I wonder if, you know, Macbeth and all these organizations are going to help them take over Earth, or, you know, are they against it? I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, that was really Star Driver-ish, I guess you could say, in a way, with the whole idea of libido being mentioned as a core thing that they're looking for in actually eating humans. That's really interesting in an odd kind of innuendo-ish kind of way.
Right. 'Cause I have a friend that we debate on this a lot, and she, you know, kind of was kind of trying to convince me that the libido is going to be a main thing in the series. I'm like, I can see that, but at the same time, I don't really see it, but I don't know. It's kind of up in the air right now. We don't really know if that's just, they're just using it as a term just for a lot first to make it more adult than it needs to be. But I mean, I'm not expecting the main forecast of the kids to, you know, start getting in romantic relationships anytime soon, because at the moment, they're all kind of innocent, so it's like, I don't see anything like that happening. Maybe more towards the adult characters, yeah, I could see that, because, you know, they're obviously, you know, old enough to understand what's going on. And it just seems weird. And then after all that, you know, Daichi is, or I guess Tepe is about to be taken. He's basically agreeing he's going to join those Amarok and Amara before. And then it's just, I guess Daichi arrives in time and says, like, you know, typical lines like, it's you, you are you. And, you know, we see this all the time in the anime. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you belong here on Earth, you're my friend. And he summons the gun and Amarok kind of freaks out. He's just like, doesn't understand. He's like, kind of shocked at what he's watching.
He's kind of shocked that a human can summon it, and it's one that he hadn't seen before.
Yeah, and he just uses the gun, like almost like the samurai showdowns. You know, they run at each other, and there's a pause, and then one falls over. His robot falls over, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And yeah, he called him a Neo-Tenny,
mm-hmm.
which is, I looked up a definition, it's something to do with, like, biology. I was kind of confused. I wasn't sure what the whole term was.
Some other kind of life form.
Right, yeah. Some other life form, basically. It's a real thing. So it's kind of weird. Okay. And the last thing, we know they leave, and like you said, they're both shocked that a human has this power to summon this gun. And they kind of leave one little moment at the end where he's like, I have a feeling Tepe will probably join us. And she's kind of like, and Moka's kind of confused, like, what do you mean? He's like, to have that power of the Kill the Gang, it's something you can't really give up. It's, mm-hmm. I guess it's just having that much power. It's like, it's, I guess, makes you want more power, I guess. It makes you greedy for power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and eventually he'll give in to that.
Right.
I can definitely see that by, like, the midway mark or something.
Yeah, because I was mentioning that, like, much like Star Driver, I mean, we mentioned it a few times. You know, the main cast in that, we have the blue-haired guy, Sugata, versus Takedo. Both of them kind of start off as kind of friends, and they clash, and then they start being enemies. So I can actually see Tepe and Daichi kind of doing this a little bit near the end, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
where they have this conflict, and they have to fight, and, you know, he has to convince Tepe that Earth is worth staying, living on, and all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's typical mech. I mean, we've seen this a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I'm not sure what episode 5 was. I think it was... Oh, yeah, episode 5 is basically them going to space. And they find Tepe, I guess, his ancestor or his clone or... Someone looks exactly like him in the space station.
I'll be interested to see, because you see, like, there's a picture of Tepe and what looks like Akari from behind looking at some mechs.
Right, yeah.
Should be good.
So I know in the original artwork, we do see the other three with flight suits, so I'm assuming if, you know, if Daichi has the life luster, he can pilot. I'm pretty sure Hana can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
Or he can give, yeah. Or she can give it to him, he can pilot in a different mode.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a different power set, we'll see. But so far, what do you think about it so far?
So far, it's been pretty good. Daichi has been a pretty good main character. I almost kind of wonder, too good of a main character. I feel like we said that about Al at the beginning of his Eureka 7 series, and then he kind of evened out there, but Daichi seems like a pretty good character. The only thing is that we have to wait for with him is to actually see him learn to pilot the mech, which I actually think that's refreshing in a way.
Right, yeah. It is different than mech genre. It's like, kid finds a robot, he knows how to pilot right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, he's got to learn how to pilot this. Almost a little bit like Shinji when he was in the EVA the first time. Yes, he had to learn somehow, but not as dramatically as Daichi, I would say. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. I mean, so far I like it. A little confusing at times, but since this is 26 episodes, I have a feeling that by episode, you know, 12 or 13, we'll probably get the full story
mm-hmm.
of what's going on. And the mysteries of, like, these organizations.
And I like that the show has a little bit of a sense of humor. We talked about the belly scene, the midriff scene, and there was also that scene at the beginning of episode 3 where Daichi's uncle was telling off that guy from Salty Dog, and the two guys at the console were like, oh man, my opinion of him just skyrocketed. And then Akari came in and she was saying those things. She's like, oh, my opinion of him just plummeted.
Right, like, I've never seen him in, like, 5 years, left me alone, no birthdays, mom doesn't talk to me, my computer's my only friend. I was like, oh my god, this girl. And like you said, those two assistants are like, well, my opinion just changed, or just dropped.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty funny. And yeah, like you said, those moments are really good. So I guess we'll see you guys next time for five. If not, five and six, depending on what happens. But yep, for JRO, it's the end of this mini talk, so see you guys next time.